Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 56.
In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Cthulhu, Death May Die, It's a Wonderful World, Gorinto, and Roland Wright. We'll look at the hot topic, bits we can't wait to fondle in 2020, aka our top 10 most anticipated releases of 2020. And there are a lot of releases in 2020, apparently. And we'll also get up to all of our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits.
Gross.
That was my Homer Simpson drool.
Yeah, I knew what you were going for.
I'm glad. So, you know, as long as I can. As long as I can entertain you.
Well, I don't know that that was entertaining so much, but I'll take it.
Yeah, it's like train wreck television.
Take what I can get.
Yeah.
And before we continue on, I just want to remind everybody that our awesome sponsor, Board Game Bliss, gave us a code that you can use to take $5 off your order of $100 or more. And it's one use per customer. And the code is ATB-TAKE5OFF100.
I'm doing a money sign with my hands. I know this is a very visual medium that we're in. I'm doing like a listen,
how
can you hear
you
it?
Do that?
Like this,
how would you make a money sign?
You know, like rubbing your fingers together, like bills, like dollar bills.
Oh, I thought you were like actually making the symbol out of your hands, and I am trying to do that.
Yeah, like you can make an S and then two lines, maybe. Yes.
Yeah, but
like
how would you do that?
I don't know. I'm sure there. I'll look up. When you're talking about whatever boring Euro you're going to talk about, I'm going to look up the American Sign Language sign for dollar bill, and then come back.
Okay, that sounds like a really good use of your time.
Anyway, speaking of a good use
of our time.
Okay, fine. Well, yes, what's the good use of our time?
Me asking you anything. What three games, Sean?
Okay.
Best represent your taste in board games.
Clank. Time's Up. Any of the variation of Time's Up. And Terraforming Mars.
Okay, explain yourself.
Well, because like deck building, I love deck building. I like games, doesn't necessarily have to be a party game, but like games that just make you laugh. And I find Time's Up gives me a lot of laughs. I laugh a lot with it. And I like engine builders and games with lots of card play, but not so much deck building games, which is Terraforming Mars, basically. Even though you are playing on the board, it's really all about your engine and all about just messing around with the cards and getting cards to work together and sync up and whatnot.
Nice. Good picks.
I'm not a very smart person, so I like having games that make me feel smart. So that's a good question. Mine is nowhere near as deep. Michelle.
Yes.
I just got to open it here. I'm getting back to something I used to annoy you with before. And that are some lovely animagrams. So it's been a while.
It has been a while.
But these
I was really hoping they were going away.
Never.
No.
So as some of our bitsers know, it is currently Felduary.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
In this very specific section of Sean Drives Michelle Crazy with Anagrams, I'm going to give you 5 anagrams of 5 Feld games. So you should be able, in theory, that's going to narrow it down a lot for you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
No.
All right. First one is Go Marie.
Go, how do you spell Marie?
So M-A-R-I-E.
How come I find these so hard? Amerigo.
Yes. It wasn't that hard. You got it right away. All right. You ready for number 2?
Yeah.
Mr. Neil.
Mr. Neil?
Yeah. And M-R, not M-I, the abbreviation.
Oh.
Mr. Neil.
Mr. Neil. What? Oh, why can't I think of the name?
You can do it. I believe in you.
Oh, I was thinking it was La Isla, but it's not La Isla. Not even close.
Oh my god.
Merlin.
Yes, very good. All right, you ready for to keep going, or do you want to tap out?
Yeah, no, let's keep going.
All right, let's keep doing it. All right. That's funny. Dean Metro.
Dean Metro.
Kind of sounds like a superhero.
Dean Metro. Or
villain. Dean Metro.
Like D-E-A-N Metro?
Yeah, M-E-T-R-O.
Okay. Oh, Notre Dame.
Yeah. All right. We're almost done. You're almost out of your misery.
This but you're is doing really
well. You're doing really well here. All right, this is my favorite of all of them. Okay. Mad Recipe.
Mad Recipe.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to think of his games here. It has a P. Oh, Carpe Diem.
Yeah. All right. And the last one. Hep Square.
I'm sorry. What now? And the who? What?
Like A, the letter A. Yeah. Hep, H-E-P, yeah. Square.
Mm-hmm. Aquasphere.
There you go.
Is a HEP a word?
I don't. Well, I come up with all these on my own, right? So I use a dictionary as I'm flipping through.
I highly doubt that.
No, but the anagram maker that I used said it was a word. So I don't know. Whatever, it's close enough.
I looked it up. There's a engineering council that sets requirements for the accreditation of higher education programs, also known as a HEP in engineering.
I knew that.
Uh-huh.
I knew that.
And there's also the Astroparticle and High Energy Physics, the America's Heartland Economic Partnership, and lastly, Alberta Hatching Egg Producers.
Ooh, that makes
we
a good
know that.
Well, that would make a good game too. Hatching Egg Producers, hey.
That would be actually that's
That'd
a good call.
Fun.
Mm-hmm. And like, there's no farming games either. So
no, there's none. None. Hey, speaking of fun and farming games.
Okay. Agricola. That's
interesting.
Our attempt at a song.
Yeah.
Where we guess the game.
We do, via awesome clues from the Board Game Geek, as the kids say.
That is what the kids say.
That's what they all say.
I heard them just this morning.
Yes, as you should. Mm-hmm. All right, who gets the luxury of going first? Yeah.
Well, I'm tired
okay.
from all my guessing, so I'm going to give you some clues.
You're going to give it to me?
Okay,
Let's do it.
Okay, are you ready?
Bring it on, sister.
All right, published. 2008.
Ooh, that's old.
It's old, like you.
Yeah, I'm
current
old.
Rating. Do you see how I just started talking over you so you
I know.
Can say anything about how old
yeah.
you are?
Yeah, I'm so old. Okay.
All right. Current rating, 7.3, and there's 45,000 ratings.
Whoa.
3 to 6 players in 30 minutes with a weight of 1.23.
Oh, that's like my type of game, okay?
It is. This is definitely your type of game. I actually don't know if you like this one, but we will
Telestrations.
No. Good guess, though. It is a party game.
Party! Okay.
And the categories are card game, humor, party game.
Cards Against Humanity?
No.
What the heck is that? Okay. Apples to apples?
No.
Pear to pear? Peach to peach? Orange to orange, banana to banana, pineapple to pineapple, mango to dried. Okay, go.
Okay, let's see. It won the Spiel in 2010.
Okay. I still have no idea what it is.
there's a game you and I play. This is not a good hint for the listeners, but there's a game you and I played that we really liked at FallCon that apparently is in this universe.
In this universe? It's a party game and in the universe?
Uh-huh. Apparently.
Weird. Okay.
Okay, I'll give you some mechanisms. Communication limits. Simultaneous action selection. Storytelling. Targeted clues. And voting.
Okay, it wouldn't be code names. The Resistance?
No.
Resistance Avalon? Coup? No, coup's it, too... Sorry, go ahead.
No, keep guessing.
None of those? Coup, Love Letter, Love Letter, Lord of the Rings, Love Letter, Batman.
All right. this game is known for its art.
Dixit.
There you go.
Ah, jeez. Oh, yeah. The Dixit just had like a 10th anniversary or something. I should put that together.
Did it? Did they do anything for it?
They came out with an expansion. I think there's like a 10th anniversary. I don't know. What game did we play that's in the Dixit universe?
Lords of Zidit. I was told.
Is it in the Dixit universe?
Yeah, because Zidit is the same. Mr. Anagrams, Zidit and Dixit.
Is Dixit? Oh.
I know. Oh, maybe it was the Seasons universe.
Well, Seasons and Lords of Zidit is the same universe, yes.
Because someone told me, maybe they were playing. No, I thought I looked it up and I was like, oh, he's right.
Well, hey, Bitsers, if you know if Dixit and Lords of Zidit is in the same universe, please let us know via social media. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so, but...
I feel like that's weird.
Yeah, it kind of is. But hey, you never know.
Speaking of Lords of Zidit, Michelle, can you guess what the game is?
Did I what now?
Can you guess what my game is?
Lords of Zidit?
No. Okay, here I go. No, it's not. It's not Seasons either.
Oh, I love that game.
I'm so funny.
Okay.
All right. Okay, this game came out in 2010.
Okay.
It's got 7.3 on BGG with 1,000 comments and 4.1 thousand ratings. It plays 1 to 4 players and has a weight of 3.34.
Okay.
It is, category is fantasy.
Fantasy.
Mechanisms are area majority / influence. Modular, okay. Modular board. 2 point movement.
2 point movement?
2 point movement.
Oh, 2 point movement. Okay.
I don't feel like this is a this is not a mechanism. Solo / solitaire game? I don't think that's a mechanism. But
is it listed as one?
Well, it's listed under mechanisms, yeah.
Huh. Weird.
It's a weird listing. And tile placement and worker placement.
You gotta give me more than this.
All right. Art is by Clemens Franz and Scott Hartman.
Okay. You're talking my jam.
Yeah. Publishers are Hall Games and Tasty Minstrel Games.
Oh, I was gonna say the Caverna, but I don't think Caverna has those publishers.
No.
Hall Games and Tasty Minstrel. Is it a Feld? Is it Office Fair? No.
No, but it is a Feld. I'm keeping up with the whole Felduary thing.
Yeah, I figured just match. What else? Rialto?
No.
No, I didn't. It doesn't.
I'm trying to see because I have not played this game.
Point to point. Okay, let me actually look at the. Oh, is it Luna?
It is Luna.
It is Luna. Mmm. Cool. That's a good game.
I know that's why I picked it. I've always loved the cover. I've never played it, but I love the cover of it.
The new deluxe version should be coming soon. I didn't back it because it was really expensive, but...
Yeah, I remember that.
It looks neat.
I'm sure it doesn't. I'm sure you'll get it.
It's so got chunky wood bits. So you'll fondle all the bits. I don't have much of a choice.
Hey, speaking of much of a choice, pew, pew, pew!
What?
No, it's just
pew.
Like... Pew!
Pew!
Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew.
There's a, those pews. My pews are questioning your segue. Pew?
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 Pew? Yeah. Pew?
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, this is our pew pew bit where we talk about games, give our impressions of games, discuss games, blah, blah, blah. Use our wonderful 5-point rating scale, which is, Michelle?
One. That would be a hard no.
Hard
two.
No.
Meh. Three. I mean, it's fine. Four, 'tis a gooder. Five, it's got the spark.
The spark. And I'm going to have all the sparks tonight.
Oh,
today.
Boy.
No.
Sean
no.
likes the spark.
No. Yes, because I love Transformers. So, you know, that's
don't
why.
Know. Don't get
that's,
it.
That, no, I know you don't, because you're a pop culture vortex, as we have discussed many times. Vortex? No. Void? Void. Is that the word I'm looking for? Void. You're a pop culture void.
It doesn't really make sense.
Listen. Listen,
or maybe
okay.
it does. I feel all like right. I'm not. I don't know anything right now.
Okay, so let me get started while you think of stuff to
this
know.
This whole Zidit Dixit thing.
I know, it's messed like... you up. All right, let me get started with a game okay. that I have been wanting to play forever and finally got the chance to play it. And a game I'm sure you're very interested in, Michelle.
Definitely.
And that is Cthulhu Death May Die from Simon Limited, I guess they're called now, designed by Rob... Oh, you know Rob Davio co-designed it. Rob Davio and Eric M. Lank, and art by... I'll give you the artist, because the art is neat in this game. Nicholas Fruckus, Carl Kapinski, Edgar... Oh, my goodness. Edgar... Edgar Skormorowski, I apologize. Adrian Smith, I know him, and Richard Wright. So, this is one of the newer, maybe the last CMON game that delivered to Kickstarter backers. I did not kickstart it, but I had heard really good things about this game. I'm a huge fan of the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast, where they talk about co-op and solo games. And this, they were very high on this game from a co-op perspective, I believe. And I've heard it in other places, and various other people who play it have been really into it. So I was very much looking forward to doing it. I got turned off. So this is the game, for those of you who don't know, who aren't aware, but I'm sure everyone is, that had that basically giant mini. And I say mini, it's a giant statue that's the size of like a human child.
Was that a Kickstarter exclusive?
It was, yes. It was like $250 or $300, something ridiculous to back to get an add-on of it. And it basically was just like one scenario that you could use it for. So I kind of got turned off from that whole spiel about it. And I kind of just, when I saw the game initially, just kind of chalked it up to basically being like Zombicide with Cthulhu. And I'm fairly worn out on... I've never been a huge Cthulhu person. I'm fairly worn out on Cthulhu. And this game kind of does feel like Zombicide meets Arkham Horror, I would say, is the feeling I get from it. Or maybe Eldritch Horror. It's actually very enjoyable. I really enjoyed it. Basically what this is, I think it's scenario or mission based. You can go through various scenarios where you're trying to defeat old ones or Cthulhu monsters, whatever they're called. Working your way up to, I guess, Cthulhu. And what you have to do on the various scenarios is you're going to have a task that you have to do. So ours was we had to destroy 404 laboratories, which is basically you have to deal 4 damage to the laboratory. And then you have to, eventually you're going to trigger the old one, whatever they're called, or ancient one. The big gut dude will come on the board and you'll have to fight him. In the meantime, you're fighting all sorts of other cultists and monsters and things like that. And you're working together to do it as well. So very, very what you would think from a game like this. You know, if you think of anything like Eldritch, Arkham Horror, Final Hour, any of those games, very similar like that. But then it takes into account you have things like fire you have to contend with, obstacles, moving from room to room with your minis. And then everyone has their own power. Like, I was a guy who was very Indiana Jones-esque. There was someone who was like Rasputin who had fire hands. So each one, you know, has your own powers, so very much variable player powers. And you have to try and do your mission, whatever your mission. Our particular episode, like I said, you had to destroy these laboratories. There was fire everywhere. It was the big fire episode, so you had to contend with fire. And how you're dealing your damage or tests against fire is you're rolling die. You roll die to deal damage, and it's got all your typical things like insanity that you have to deal with. A nice thing that I enjoyed about this this particular game too is the more insane you go, so usually in these types of games, at least I find, is that insanity kind of usually will kill you or be the end of you, and in this ultimately it will too, but you have a bit of a tech tree, a power tree that your character can do, and the more insane you get, you hit thresholds where you get more die and you get to move up on your tech tree, so you get stronger and stronger, and you have, I think, 4 or 5 levels that you can go up before you die, before you have to start figuring what you're going to do. You can't go insane anymore. So I like that. That's a cool mechanism that I hadn't really experienced, is that you get stronger and stronger as you go. And like I found, I was trying with my character, because he's all about defense, my guy. I wanted to get strong so I could help the fights more. So I had to like go insane quicker. So I was just constantly rolling your die, because when you roll your die, you get the insanity. You might get the insanity token thing on there. You also, at the beginning of the game, you also get cards that give you, like, they might give you a special power or they might be negative depending what you get though, but it triggers when when you hit one of those insanity markers, one of the levels. And like mine, for instance, was you deal 2 damage to every character, every figure in the same space as you, which is really neat, because you can kind of time when you go insane to moving in where a bunch of the bad guys are, and you can hit them for a whole bunch of damage. It's almost like you're a time bomb. So it's got a lot of neat things. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I think from what I heard about it, I think it lives up to the hype, which was really neat. Kind of, again, similar. I have a feeling this is going to be a similar case with me to like Blood Rage, is that I didn't back it, and now I'm like, ugh. It's like, if I want to buy it retail, then there's going to be, you know, CMON. Not necessarily the giant baby mini, but all the other expansions and add-ons that you probably need to go get. So I'm like, I probably need to just stay away from this game and not play it anymore, because then it's going to, like, take over me, and I'm going to have to get it. But it was quite enjoyable, and so it's definitely Tis a Gooder for me. This game was Tis a Gooder. I'm not giving it the spark, Michelle. I'll have you know. I don't know how much replayability there is in this once you make it through all the scenarios, especially if you only have the retail version. I think you have, I think I read you have 6 or 8, something like that, to start. But much like a lot of these CMON games, you want that extra content, especially if it's game impacted, because it will prolong the experience for you. So I don't know how much replayability is there, but again, I'm assuming it gets really, really hard. Like, this was kind of difficult too. So I'm assuming it gets harder and harder, so you probably have to work at it to get to complete the missions. But that's Cthulhu Death May Die. It was definitely an enjoyable experience. I've been kind of meh on CMON games since Rising Sun, but this one kind of restored some faith in me.
How are the minis?
They're gorgeous. They're absolutely, they're very tentacly, if you will.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was looking at all the pictures of the painted minis, and there's some pretty cool looking ones.
Yeah, I can imagine painting, as usual with all these things, like how amazing they look painted. And it's like,
yeah, it's crazy.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, my first It's a Wonderful World.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. That's right. Yeah. This was published in 2019, has a current rating of 7.9 on BGG with 1,600 ratings, plays 1 to 5 in 30 to 60 minutes, and has a weight of 2.24. It is designed by Frederick Girard, art by Anthony Wolfe, and published by Le Boite de Jeu, is that how you say it?
Yes.
Yes. Wonderful. So this is a engine building game. They say card drafting, hand management, set collection. So there you go. So the way this game works is you are drafting cards. And then you choose what you want to do with your cards. So you can choose to use a card immediately to get resources. And their resources are just, I think there's like five different colors of cubes. Or you can put it down into your tableau with the intent of building it. And you build cards with the resources. So a card might be like, need five black cubes, for example. And then you go through production. So all your cards that have been built have special production powers. So like, get two black cubes, get one red cube, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, you wouldn't get a red cube. Or maybe you would. I can't remember. Anyway, so yeah. So, and that's pretty much the sequence. You just do that a bunch of times. There's, when you do production, it's kind of neat. The board is laid out in such a way that there's like a little circle for each of the colors. And you always go from left to right.
Okay.
And whoever has the most production of each color gets this like guy or girl token. I don't know, remember what they're called. And those can give you bonuses and whatnot. So it's like, it's a really simple bonus game. Mm-hmm. But there's like a good sense of that, like ramping up where, you know, you start off like getting very little and then towards the end you're getting a lot. There's different types of cards, like there's blue cards and black cards. And so there's lots of cards that have, if you build them, they have a lot of like end game bonuses. So, you know, for every girl token you have, you get 2 points. For every black card you have, you get 3 points, like that sort of thing. So you're really trying to combo everything to maximize your points. So, yeah, that's it in a gist. Mm-hmm. The bits are fine. The cards are a little bit bigger than standard size. The cubes are translucent, which is always a nice touch. But it's really nothing special. It's pretty straightforward for what it is. Like, it kind of feels like you would expect it to feel, if that makes any sense. Although the one thing that kind of feels unique is just how the sequencing of production, because it is something you'll consider when you're trying to figure out what you can and want to do.
Okay.
So that's kind of neat. It's a very quiet game. It's one of those games because, you know, you're just drafting and then, yeah, it's a lot of like, and then I'll do this and then I'll do this kind of on your own terms. But the vying for the bonuses, when you're doing the production, so when you're looking at each color, it'll, you know, you'll say, okay, blue, and everyone says the number, like I produce 5 blue cubes, you know, that there's some interaction there. Like if you really want those tokens for whatever reason, you know, you might be looking at other players, but that's basically the extent of it. So it's pretty solo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's asymmetrical powers. So like each player board has its own productions and game scoring, if I remember correctly. So that's a nice touch. Yeah, it's a good touch if you're in, I always kind of struggle with asymmetrical powers because it's like I like having them, but then sometimes you feel so much like put into a corner as to how to play the game, and I like to make my own decisions, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I find it kind of depends on the game. Like if you feel like you're being smart about it and you're really utilizing it well, and I don't know how to describe it, but anyways,
that's fair. I understand.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So they're okay. Like I haven't played the game enough to know like how much they really, really push you into doing one thing. And maybe because the game lacks some depth, maybe that's why it kind of felt a little bit pushy, but they are there and it is nice. For this game, the solo mode I played once and I remember enjoying it. There were different scenarios that you could try. It was really quick and easy to set up and not difficult to pick up. It was really pleasant and it's what you'd expect from a game like this.
Yeah.
I know
that's
some
fair.
People really love it. Like there is a good sense of that ramping up and getting good combos, which I think can be a lot of fun. But overall, for me, there wasn't, like, I would play it, no problem. But yeah. There wasn't really enough for me to be like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, this is really good. So I give it a 3.
Okay.
You know, what's our 3? I mean, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's It's a Wonderful World.
Cool. So should I play this? That's my question for you.
I think you would like this game.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you would.
Because I've been eyeing it for a while now. Or at least wanting to play it.
Yeah, I think you would enjoy it.
Okay. That's fair.
I don't think, like, the only, if you're looking for something new and different, I don't think this is the game. But if you're just, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
playing,
fair.
Playing that type of game with, like, a slightly different flair than Giddy Up, I think you'd really like this.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool beans. All right. I am going to talk about a game now that is currently on Kickstarter. And that is Gorinto, that is published by Grand Gamers Guild, with designed by Richard Yanner, with art by Josh Capel, who we talked about not long ago for the Artemis Project, does great art, and love the box of this, the look of this game as well. This game is Grand Gamers Guild sent it to us to look at for the show, Michelle, and I have to get you to play it as well, before the Kickstarter closes, but I wanted to talk about it now while it's very fresh in my mind, because I've had comments from people that I'd like to share with everyone. But this game, like I said, is currently on Kickstarter for the time of that this episode drops. Will be a little over 2 weeks. They have already funded. I apologize for our American friends. I'm just going to go by the Kickstarter page because it lists things in Canadian, because, hey, we're Canadian. But they were seeking $13,250, and they are currently at over 28,000 Canadian with 503 backers. So it seems like it's going well, which is nice. This is an abstract game, but it's got some interesting mechanisms that kind of make it into very much a set collection with some engine building built in as well, which is really neat. And it is, I will say, this is very quick, which I love. I love about abstracts. I'll talk about something that happened after in a second, why I love a quick abstract, which is very important to me when I'm playing abstracts. But basically what you are doing in this game is there are two areas to your board. There's what's called the path, which is kind of the outer edge, the outer edge, a row and a column of the board. Then there's the mountain, which is the main stack of tiles for the game. And the tiles in the base game, not counting the mini expansion, are built into, there are 5 different tiles in the game based on the elements. So wind, fire, water, and earth are 4 of them. And then there's another one called void. And I'll say I don't know enough about elements and Japanese lore and things to know what void is, so I apologize. But what's neat about this game is, so what you are doing is you are taking a tile from the path, which is from the outer edge, and you are moving it onto the mountain, and then you collect tiles from there, and then you are going to put them on your player board, which has space for each of the 5 different elements on there. And this is called your understanding, but this is where you're going to stack your tiles. However, each tile that you move from the path has a different placement pattern, which is what's really neat, which is where the originality in this game goes. So, for instance, the 2 easiest ones to explain are fire and water. Fire, you move on, and you could collect tiles from the column that you moved it in. So you're always moving in a straight line, like you're moving across or down, or with your tiles. And water is the same, but you're moving, you can collect from the row that you move it onto. And again, you can collect any number of chips as long as you have the right understanding, which I will get to in 1 second. Enough understanding. Wind lets you collect tiles that are orthogonally adjacent to it. So up, down, above, below, or left or right. The void ones let you collect ones that are diagonally adjacent. So upper and lower corners diagonal. And then earth lets you collect tiles, are the only ones that let you collect tiles from the stack that you moved it onto. When I mentioned understanding, this is where I think where really the engine-y stuff comes in. So when you start the game, you have space for 5 different stacks for each of the elements, and you start with an understanding of one. And what that means is you can only collect tiles equal to the amount of understanding you have. You cannot collect more. So if I move my water tile and try and collect two fire tiles, but I only have one understanding, I can't collect two. I can only collect one. However, as you add to your stack, then you have more understanding and you can start collecting more. So if I have, let's say, two fire tiles, that means I have my original one plus two. So I have three understanding. Now, if I, let's say, move my earth tile onto a stack that had three fire in it, I could collect those three fire. So that's a very interesting mechanic, is that you're managing these stacks of understanding, which really determines how many tiles you can collect. That's basically the game. You do that for four seasons. Depending how many players you are, you're going to have a set number of turns. You do that for four rounds. The game is also has variable scoring, which is really neat. So at the end of each season, before the game starts, you select two scoring cards at random. And at the end of each season, those cards score. And there are, there are 12. Scoring cards, and they are things like score your tallest stack twice and score your shortest stack once, or there might be like score the difference between your biggest stack and your smallest stack, something like that. So this is really neat because it basically means that your scoring changes from game to game, and that determines your strategy that you're going to. So some games you might try and have some of each stack. Other games, if the scoring lets you, let's say, score between your tallest and your biggest, well, you're probably going to keep between your tallest and your shortest, you're probably going to keep one of your stacks empty, right? Because then you can score more points because that difference is bigger. And there's also, so that scores the same at the end of each season. And then at the end of the game, there are element cards that score 2 points per every element that you have. So there are the five different elements. You'll choose two at the beginning, and at the end of the game, each one you have, like, for instance, if you have fire and void, for each fire and void you have, you get 2 points per tile. And that's pretty much the game. The game is super smooth. It's got, like I said, tons of variability, because not only do you have like those 12 goal cards that change the scoring up, you have the five different element cards for the 2 points at the end of the game. They also give you in the book various ways to set up that might change things. So there's kind of like the main initial one that you do, the default one, and how many tiles you stack on each space of the mountain to start the game. But there's, in the back of the book, there's a few different alternatives as well. And I'm sure you could do other ways as well to do it. And that's kind of it. So this was a prototype copy, but I will say the final components, if you look at the Kickstarter page, look absolutely stunning. It's what we would expect from Grand Gamers Guild. One of the players mentioned right away that he wished they would have edges to make it less fiddly so they stack better. That was before he saw the Kickstarter page, and sure enough, that's what they're doing. So it's going to be nice, thick, chunky blocks for it. It's going to have really nice components. The artwork looks really nice as well.
There are there is a retail version though, and a Kickstarter version.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yeah, the Kickstarter comes with a custom sculpted 3D figurine, a metal coin,
there is
a mini expansion, a silkscreen drawstring bag, and a metallic foil embellishment on the cover. Kind of your standard stuff.
Your Kickstarter stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really enjoyable, everyone who's played it enjoyed it quite a bit. You know, I'll go back to, I think we've talked about Photosynthesis on the show at some point, which is another really fun abstract game that deals with the abstractness in a different way. But it's a game that like tends to slog a little bit because there could be so much AP involved in it, which sometimes you get from these types of games. And we played this right after this last night, and it was like, yeah, it's like really, people were commenting that they really enjoyed the much faster, quicker pace. They're two different games, obviously, but in terms of my own personal preference, I like that quick. Like this game, it says 30 to 60 minutes. Every time I play it, it hasn't come close to 60 minutes. I think I played it six or seven times now, and Yeah. So give it a check. I'm not going to give a rating because we don't have the final components. And, I definitely want to play this with Michelle as well, so she can give her thoughts on it. But definitely the Kickstarter link will be in the show notes, and, give it a look. Yeah, that's Garinto from Grand Gamers Guild.
Cool. Yeah. I've been into abstracts lately. I've always wanted to play Yinch, and I finally played Yinch, and mm-hmm. it kind of got me on an abstract kick. So this is good timing.
And I'm excited to try it. You will really like this.
It looks really it looks really neat.
You will really like this. Yeah.
And also, I looked up Wikipedia. I Wikipedia'd mm-hmm. Void.
Yes.
So it's other meaning, or it also means sky or heaven. Mm. And it represents those things beyond our everyday experience, particular those things composed of pure energy. I did not know this.
You know what? I need lots of void in my life because energy and me do not get along.
Yes, we need more void.
Yeah.
This whole podcast needs more void.
Oh, it's all right. Pretty energetic so far.
That's Come true. On. We managed to like keep it up and then whine about being tired.
Why? Because we're so old. I know.
All right. The last pew-pew of this episode goes to Roland Wright, the dice game. So
such a great name.
Yeah, it's a great name. Roland Wright. Mm-hmm. Like Roland Wright. Yes. Spelling it out, just in case I need to, for anybody. So, this was published in 2020 and has a current rating of 7.0 with 61 ratings. Very popular. Mm-hmm. Plays 1 to 5 players in 20 to 30 minutes and has a weight of 2. The designer is Chris Handy. And the art is Chris Handy and Daniel Solis. And the publisher is Perplexed. And these are the guys that did the... Now I can't think of it. Those pocket games?
Yeah, the gum size games.
Yeah. What were they called?
Paco games.
Paco games. There you go. Yeah. So I like Roland Wrights, as you know. Backed this one on Kickstarter because it didn't have a huge funding behind it. So I thought, hey, this is something I could probably help the publisher out. Mm-hmm. Which is the idea behind Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So this is a Roland Wright with colors, which is kind of unique. There are a number of dice with different colors on each side. You roll the dice and you group the dice by color. So you put all the blues together, all the reds together, etc. And then as the active player, the person who rolled the dice, you pick one group of color. So, hey, I'm going to do all the reds. And then everybody else gets to choose from what's left over. And it's not like if Sean's beside me, he picks the blue, no one else gets the blue. It's literally a free-for-all for what's left. So everyone can pick the blues, for example. And what you're doing is you're filling in a grid of circles. And depending on the length of the game, I think it goes by 6x6 and then 7x7, I'm pretty sure. And you're just filling in dots. So if I got 3 blue dice, I would fill in 3 blue dots. And they can go anywhere. They don't need to be adjacent. And what you're ultimately trying to do is get points by completing patterns. So
that's cray-cray.
Yeah, it is cray-cray. So there actually are a lot of different objective cards. There's like public objectives. You have a private objective that'll say like, hey, every pair of red and blue, you get 3 points. And then you also have the pattern cards that you get. And some of them will give you, if you complete them, you get like bonuses. So, you know, every turn you can circle a red or color in a red or something like that, but you get less points for it. Or there are other pattern cards where you just complete the pattern and you get like full points, that sort of thing. The most unique aspect of this game is that there are also actions that people can take when you're not the active player. So each turn, you can take one of these actions, and basically what it involves is erasing a color, a dot that you've colored in, and then doing the thing for that color. So like, for example, I think yellow allows you to, like, you would erase yellow and then you can move one of your colored in dots to another spot, which is great. Like if you've just completed a pattern, now you can try to complete a different pattern. You know, there's ones where I think red allows you to copy. A few of the different colors let you pick up more cards so you can get more points, that sort of thing. And then you get bonuses, like if you complete, you know, diagonal or you complete, the, you know, the top row and stuff like that. But that's the general gist of the game. Yeah. So, bits. I always start with the bits. Bits are great. The cards are a little bit cheap, but they're kind of gloss. They're actually not kind of glossy. They're very glossy and kind of fun to handle because they're glossy. Don't ask me why. It's just me. I backed it on Kickstarter, so I have a really cute little thimble, metal thimble with an eraser on the tip, which is kind of fun.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's super sweet.
Good laugh at that. And even the retail version comes with a top hat. That is the eraser.
Yeah.
So, good touch. And then for the different colors, you have a set of pens, and there's one per color. So that's actually one of the problems with this game. And it's not a huge problem, but it does... It does feel a little bit chaotic in that everybody's sharing these colors. So if everyone decides that they want to do yellow, you're like waiting for people to do their yellow. Again, it's not a huge deal, but yeah, there's that. Yeah, I don't know. Overall, I felt like it was really chaotic the few times I've had of it because, like, everyone's, like, sharing pens and some people are, like, drawing cards and other people are, like, discarding stuff. And it's just, like... You know, no one's really talking because it's a very solo game, but there's just like a lot of stuff going on.
That's fair.
And in addition to that, there's a lot of ways to score points, and it almost feels like too much because you've got these public objectives, you got a private objective, you've got your pattern cards, and there's two different types of pattern cards. You've got, I don't know, other stuff. Like it's just, it's almost a little bit much. And because it's a roll and write, you know, it clips at a pretty good pace. So you're, so it's like, okay, so like, what? I don't know. It just felt like a little bit much.
Mm-hmm.
So add on like just the number of scoring options and add that to kind of the chaotic feeling of like people putting pens everywhere and cards are going everywhere. I'm, like, one of those people who sets up a solo game and, like, has everything lined up just so and, like, has little bit cups and stuff. So it could just be my own, like, personal preferences for having things, like, neat. I don't know. But it did feel like a lot. I am somebody who likes a point salad, so it's not that typically I don't like games or there's lots of ways to score points. I typically do. But this one just felt almost like it was too much. I will give it some credit. A, its name is very cute.
Yeah.
B, it's got great art, and it does feel unique in its space. Like, I've played a lot of Roll and Writes, and this one definitely felt different, and a little bit more interesting than a lot in terms of, like, having those special actions. Yeah. So, I'm going to try the solo and see if I enjoy it more at that pace, but right now, I'm actually going to give it a 2, which is fairly low for me. It's meh. Yeah, I think if it was, like, a slightly more focused, slightly more refined game, I would probably like it a lot more. But as it sits right now, it's just kind of, like, a bit much, I guess. Yeah. What did you think of it? Because we played this one together.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike it as much as I dislike most Roll and Write. I guess for me, that's kind of a plus. I agree. It's definitely, especially if you're playing with a big complement of players, it's super chaotic because you're like, you're rolling the dice and then you're like, you're constantly waiting for a pen from some, a marker from someone and having to do it. So I guess that could kind of be solved by getting markers, but then you need different color markers. It's not like you just need black markers. So that was kind of, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know.
How did you feel about all the scoring options?
Yeah, I found that to be definitely to be a little bit much, and to keep track of that. I like that you can manipulate the colors. Like, I thought that was a cool thing to do to, to help you get your stuff, but it starts to build up. Like, I honestly found it too overwhelming to do that, and I just stuck with, like, a couple of cards and maybe got a couple of extra cards, whereas I think you were getting a whole, or some, a few people were just getting a bunch of cards, and I'm sure that that totally works. That's what you're supposed to do, but I just found it way too overwhelming, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a lot to track for such a simple little game.
Yep, and that's
in terms of objectives.
Usually my problem with Roll and Rights these days anyway is when there's too much to do, it's like, eh, just give me a board game.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right.
Shall we move on our pew-pew
to our hot pocket topic?
Topic
hot.
It's hot because it's a topic that we like to talk about.
Oh, that's good. That's pretty decent.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Singer-songwriter. Yeah. It's on our website.
Yeah, you can retain Michelle's services to write songs.
Yes, but they have to be a little bit simple, if you will.
You are a simple individual.
Nothing deep.
Well, you know what we should do, Michelle?
What's that?
Since, you know, I was going through our iTunes comments, and I think the last person who gave us an iTunes comment talked about how amazing our sound effects are. And I think they were actually being serious, too, which is... But they talked about our sound effects and how enjoyable it is that, you know, we don't... Why can't I think of that? What's that rapper who does, like, the audio, like, that stuff? You know who I mean, right? I can't think of his name.
But, I actually don't.
Well, of course, Pop Culture Void. That's right. I think, you know, people, you know, if you have a podcast, if you're an aspiring content creator out there, you can hire us to do sound effects for your show.
It's true.
Can you imagine if someone has, like, you know, I think the big podcasts these days are, like, Cold Case and murder mystery type things. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if we were doing sound effects for, like, a Cold Case podcast? So-and-so was murdered 35 years ago, and then we're doing these ridiculous sound effects. That would be amazing. So hire us.
I think you're just going to have to do that for your own entertainment.
I will. Next time I'm going to watch Law & Order, just make sound effects throughout the whole thing.
Oh, that actually sounds kind of fun.
I know, it'd be amazing. All right, so this is our hot topic where we're going to talk about the bits we can't wait to fondle in 2020, a.k.a. Michelle, our top 10 anticipated releases of 2020.
Yes, and in typical Sean fashion,
yeah,
you saw 21 pages of releases.
No. Yes, okay, yes, go ahead. Okay, yes.
And you made it through...
Four. Okay. I was very overwhelmed.
Yeah, so this is a refined list for you.
For me,
I don't know where you got 21 pages.
I'm BGG. I did, like, an advanced search from, like, games 2020 to 2020, and it was, like, 21 pages or something ridiculous.
Wow, crazy. That's a good way to do it. That's why I wanted to ask, because I used the 20 most anticipated games of 2020 11th year nomination thing.
Oh, that's smart.
Rick Vineyard does a nominations.
That's smart.
And this one had 18 pages, so I wasn't far behind, but...
And I will say that a lot of the German companies, like the games you would probably really be interested in, Michelle, aren't even, like, you know, I feel like those don't get announced till, like, the spring or summer, you know, so they're still probably... Yeah. Pages and pages and pages of games to come. So we might have to,
it's
like,
crazy.
We might have to, it's maddening. We might have to, you know, revisit this after.
Do you have, like, a system for trying to keep on top of new releases and what's out and what looks interesting?
Not really. I mean, sorry, I'm scratching my ear. It's really itchy. It's usually just social media, you know, people like you or, like, what Bitzers talk about on, you know, or, yeah, it's like, it's so hard. I mean, often, too, it'll be, like, games that were on Kickstarter 6 months-ish ago, stuff I'm interested in, or, you know, I'll see news. I try and, like, W. Eric Martin usually has really good, like, news things on BGG. I find that a really good recap of, to know what's coming up and what's doing. But then, yeah, like, if I ever, like, when I try and, like, just check out all the new I get super overwhelmed, man. It's like,
crazy,
very overwhelming. So,
it's insane, yeah.
How about you?
I do, yeah, I Well, for like new releases that are already out, I find the Dice Tower week in review is really great because I can just see that at a glimpse and kind of get a sense of like whether or not I'm interested in a game. And they're pretty thorough in their reviews, and, like in terms of how many games they review.
And hey, we are proud members of the Dice Tower Network.
We are. Yeah, and then just kind of the normal routes. Like, obviously, when it comes to con season, I use Eric Merton's lists that he creates, like, for Gen Con. And I think he does one for Origins now. And
yeah,
Essen.
He does for everything, even, like, New York Toy Fair, like, all of them.
Yeah, yeah. So I usually look at those. Once in a while, I might look at, like, Rotto does, I think it, I don't know if it's annual that he does one, but he... or he also has his monthly podcast, which I don't typically listen to, but sometimes I catch that. Yeah, he's kind of word of mouth.
He's got
social media.
I'll give another a second for Rado. Like before Gen Con and Essen, I think he does like on his podcast. He'll like go over every single like new game that may be released at those times. I find those super useful. Like I don't listen to the podcast all the time, but I definitely make sure to listen to those. And I think to go along with that, he has his own, because I remember him directing people on the show. He has his own, now that I think of it, his own geek list of, I think, things coming out maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, actually, I did go through that. That's another, yeah, because I created my own geek list for myself. And
Miss Fancy,
pulling a lot from him. I know, it's my first geek list. Look at me go.
That's cray cray.
All right. Any like caveats around this top 10? Like what you didn't include? Well,
I tried really hard, and now looking at the list, there is one on there, but I'm too lazy to change it. I try really hard to avoid games that I've backed on Kickstarter.
Okay.
But there is one on there mostly because it's currently in Kickstarter hell and I just didn't realize as I was doing it, but I guess I'm still looking forward to it, but we'll see.
I have two Kickstarters that I backed, Fruticola, which I'm still debating, and Tangaroo, I think is what it is. And I didn't put either of those on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There you go.
Anything right. else?
No, that was kind of it. I don't have expansions.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, I have standalone. I think I have at least one game that can be used as an expansion, but it's a standalone experience. So,
okay.
Yep. All right. Should we get started?
Let's do this.
Shall I go first with my number 10?
Sure.
All right. My number 10 is, and some of these games I don't know a ton about. There's a couple here that literally don't have anything in their thing. But my number 10 is Grindhouse. I was taken this one. It was purely based on the cover. I saw the cover and I was like, okay, I'm going to click this. And I think this game was on Kickstarter before. This is a quick card game, but it is a horror narrative game. So if you're familiar kind of with grindhouse pulp horror movies from like the 60s and 70s, I guess, it seems very much like it's a narratively driven card game. That's about the extent I know of it, but it definitely seems interesting. I'm always into a narrative game, and a narrative game that can be relatively quick is bonus points, because there's a narrative experience like Tales of Arabian Nights, which could take 3 or 4 hours, and there's a narrative experience that could take maybe a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour, something like that. So this seems more on the quicker side, which is nice. So I'm very curious about this.
Cool.
Yeah.
I had not heard of this.
I had not heard of it until I saw it, so okay, here we go.
My number 10 is My City by Reiner Knizia.
Oh, I've heard of this.
This is a legacy game.
Oh.
And yeah, it's there's 24 episodes where you're developing a city. You start in pre-industrial stages and you progress through industrialization. Apparently, this is interesting. If you don't want to experience it as a legacy game, there's a double-sided game board.
Oh.
But you have to still play through the first 4 episodes to, I don't know, build it, I guess. It looks, there's polyominoes, so the player boards are grids. And yeah, there's polyomino pieces, and that's about all. But I've been playing Clank Legacy, as you know, and I'm really having a fun time with it, and the group is really good, so I would like to find another Legacy game to play with them. And yeah, I think this one might be fun.
Cool.
And I like Reiner Knizia. The playtime is 45 minutes, so I think it'll be a lighter game, but yeah.
Cool beans. It'll
be good.
Yeah. My number 9 is the game I'm assuming will be your number 1 or number 2, but I'm just going to talk about it very quickly. Maybe you'll have more information about it. And that is The Castles of Tuscany by Stefan Feld from Aaliyah Games. And this is the description on BGG is, The Castles of Tuscany is a standalone game that might resemble The Castles of Burgundy in some way.
I read that earlier today and I laughed.
And that's that's one thing, going back to Rado, if you listen, when he talks about, like, especially I think he really targets European publishers with this, that they really don't utilize BGG in the right way. And he really gets on publishers when they're not putting information that might be helpful to the retail, to the consumer on BGG. But hopefully this will be populated as time goes on.
Oh my God, that's my number. Yeah, it's so funny. It's like,
that's my number.
Family, admin, better description, admin. Yeah. It's just... yeah, good call. Good call.
All right.
My number 9 is Sleeping Gods. So this is a Ryan Lockett game, Red Raven Games. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the next, I don't want to say a near and far sequel because it's certainly not that, but I think in terms of like his design space, this is kind of the next step. So it's an Atlas game similar to Near and Far, and it's narrative and cooperative if you play with more players, so it plays 1 to 4.
Cool.
I know there's been videos out there. This was on Kickstarter. I haven't actually seen a lot of those, so I don't know as much about it as probably a lot of people. It looks interesting. I mean, I do like Ryan Lockett's art. I do like the idea of I'd probably play it solo, so like a solo narrative campaign. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, you kind of like can start and stop whenever you please, and you're really just exploring to find, what is it? I don't know, some like 11 things. I can't remember what it is. So it almost sounds like a video game where you're just like exploring and finding people and things and whatnot. So interesting. Might be good, might not be. I find a lot of his games are like 3s for me, like solid down the middle. But his art always draws me in and I'm always kind of hopeful. And this one sounds like a somewhat unique experience. So I'm looking forward to it.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's Sleeping Gods.
Nice. I was definitely interested in that when it was on Kickstarter. I gave it a hearty look.
Did you now?
Sorry, I gotta move because my legs have both fallen asleep as usual. All right, my number 8. Oh dear. All right, my number 8 is I think it's pronounced Fossilis. Fossilis from Kids Table Board Games, designed by David Alberto Diaz, with art by Josh Capel, who we seem to be talking about a lot. So I had the opportunity to play this game. Was on Kickstarter. It's off now. It's successfully funded. I had the opportunity to play this at Gen Con, and it is a set collection game in the vein of the classic kids game Operation. So what you are doing is you're basically digging through sand, and then you have your little tweezer things, and you're excavating dinosaur bones from locations that you've excavated or that you've dug through. And then you're basically trading in different bones for cards that are worth points, like that. So you're collecting various kinds of sets to get points. It is a really fun experience. And it's the type of game that will work fairly well. Kids' table games usually work fairly well for adults, and, you know, as a light gateway game. There are some that are more for kids. But I think, yeah, I'm super excited for this. And yeah, I adore it. I adore the look of it. I adore the play of it. I can't wait for it.
Neat idea.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, definitely a little bit different too.
Cool. My number 8, did you say?
That was my number. Yeah.
All right. Well, my number 8 is Dice Realms. This is by Thomas Lehman, who's done Race for the Galaxy, Roll for the Galaxy, Favor of the Pharaoh, and probably many more. This is, I would describe it from what I see, Dice Forge on steroids. So,
oh my goodness, I should more deep. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just about customizing dice. It looks like there are a ton of different dice die faces. So I know the last Roll for the Galaxy expansion had this idea, but it was very expensive, so I never bought it. But it's kind of like a deck builder in the sense that you'll only bring out X number of faces each game. So the game, in theory, should feel quite different. And yeah, you're building up your dice. It says there's 5 standard lines of faces: victory, farming, commerce, defense, and upgrades. Play is simultaneous. So it might be like really solo, really fast. I don't know. It could be really good. It could just be not very good at all. I don't know. I feel like this really could go either way. And it's probably going to be rather expensive. It says there's 18 dice, 650 die faces,
oh my God,
and 72 types.
That's going to be a fortune.
Yeah. 3 custom trays to hold them all. Tiles, grain, VP. Yeah. So it's a lot. But this could be really fun. I mean, I love rolling dice. I love the idea of customizing dice. So I'll definitely be keeping an eye on this one. Cool. And that's Dice Realms, my number 8.
Cool. All right. My number 7 is, and I do a sigh because last time there was a Fallout game, I was disappointed with it. We'll see about this one, is Fallout Shelter, the board game, from Fantasy Flight Games, designed by Andrew Fisher. Well, it comes in a very cute lunchbox. A box that looks like a lunchbox, which is neat. Fallout Shelter is a...
We're so easily swayed. Oh,
yes, but also the fact that I'm a huge Fallout fan. Fallout Shelter is a app, an app game, very, very much in the vein of like the Sim games from back in the day, where you're building your shelter, but instead of you're building like Sim Tower or something like that. I don't know a ton about this game either. There doesn't seem to be very much information on Board Game Geek. It does say it's worker placement, which is interesting. So, which would make sense given what the app is like. So that actually makes me very interested in it. So we'll see. I have no idea. I have a feeling the most Fallout thing about this game will probably be the art on the box. But we'll see.
And the minis.
We'll see. Yeah, fingers crossed, because there needs to be a really good Fallout game at some point.
Are there other ones?
Well, there's Fallout, the board game from Fantasy Flight, which had some weird dragging things. I don't know. For me, it didn't work. It worked in some ways, but I found the story really disjointed, which was my problem with it. And I think they released an expansion, the California expansion. I don't think it fixed it, but it was good, but it wasn't what I wanted. So I don't think this will be either, but it's got Fallout Boy on the box, the Fallout Vault guy on the box. So that makes me want it.
Yeah. So this is my question. So I just looked up both of them. So yeah. Fallout has like not cartoony looking art at all.
Yeah.
It's actually like rather serious.
Yes. Because it's designed at more after the like from Fallout 3 on, like the Xbox PlayStation game, whereas this is based on an app, which is a very cartoony app. I played it a fair bit. It's an enjoyable app, but yeah. So we'll see.
All right, cool.
We'll see.
Yeah, fingers crossed for you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And you know what? If it sucks, at the end of the day, you got a pretty sweet lunchbox out of the whole
thing.
That's
true. So, you know what? Yeah. That is very true.
Yeah. All right. My number 7 is Roam and Roll. This is by Nick Shaw and David Turksey. Mm-hmm. They've done some games that I like. And this is supposed to be a heavy, it's a weight of 3, so I would say medium weight, roll and write. I'm kind of getting sick of roll and writes. Like, they certainly don't excite me the way they used to. Yeah. yeah. But I love the idea of if it works, this could be really good. Again, this was on Kickstarter. I didn't pay a ton of attention to it because I figured I would just get it in retail. It looks kind of what you'd expect. Like, you roll the dice, there's a bunch of different options. There's like a little map where you can travel down. There's buildings you can build. There looks like you can get special effects. You have this like crazy player board where there's a bunch of different things you can cross off that obviously makes you powerful in different ways. There's, wait for it, polyomino shapes. Shocker. Oh my god, when will the polyomino end?
I don't think it's gonna end.
I think it'll die down to some extent. It's like the hex now.
I feel like it's just a thing.
It's everywhere, man. And then there's, polyomino shapes you build on a board. It kind of looks like it's a shared board, which sounds interesting. I think. I'm not entirely sure, but from the little bit I read, that's what it looked like. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. It's nice to see them trying to do something. Good designers. And hopefully it'll be a good one and it won't make me go, ugh, I'm done. I'm just done with Rolling Rights. We shall see.
All righty. My number six is Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. So I alluded to this before. This is one where it's a standalone, but I think you can incorporate your characters into regular Gloomhaven. But this is Gloomhaven.
Which is perfect for you because those two plays we
got. Oh my gosh, yeah, those... and so this is kind of like, okay, the reason I never got Gloomhaven, don't really have a desire for it, is A, the setup of it. Our two plays, someone else was setting it up. A bitzer of ours was setting it up. And he owned the game. And then the whole organizing it and keeping it, and it just seems like such an ordeal to actually get the game set up.
So coming from someone who won't even sticker.
Exactly. And I don't think there are stickers in Gloomhaven.
No, but I mean...
So Gloomhaven, Jaws at Life is their way to hit a more casual audience. And they've replaced the map tiles with a scenario book, which I'm a huge fan of. That's like, so if you think of, all those games from... Plaid Hat. That's what I'm looking for, right?
Like Fables,
Aftermath, Quirky Circuits, all those games, they use that. I'm a huge fan of that because, again, that condenses space so much. I love that. And, again, if it's something where, okay, I get this and I get through the scenario and then I'm like, oh, okay, then maybe that will motivate me to actually play Gloomhaven. But I love the idea of this type of game to get people into... get that similar experience but not have to go through Gloomhaven, which I just don't think I can ever do that anyway, but
mammoth.
So
I think that's like probably the only expansion announcement that's actually made me laugh out loud
is what
was when they announced a Gloomhaven expansion. Like, how do you possibly
need an expansion
more?
I
know there are groups who have
gone through it, yeah,
and like, are also like making their headway through it, but yeah, it's just so much.
Yep.
All right. So, well, my next pick is Viscounts of the West Kingdom. So in the typical Garfield game, Shem Phillips way, this is a trilogy, the West Kingdom trilogy. And this is the last one that's coming out. For people who don't listen very often or have forgetful minds like mine. I did not like the first one, Architects. I found it too mean. And I really liked Paladins. So this one, I don't know a whole lot about it. I don't know if it'll be more like Paladins or what, but I hope it will be. It says it has deck big and pool building, a modular board, a rondel, set collection, and variable player power. So all of those things sound pretty great. And there's a picture online that has the board, and the board is like a hex. Or I don't know how many sides it has. You can't tell. But anyways, it looks like a rondel, like the whole board is a rondel. And then in the middle, there's what looks like a circular fortress with three rings, and they have different action spaces, and there's workers in there. So I'm assuming that's the rondel as well. I'm always hopeful. I enjoy the small box size. I adore the art. And, you know, the games, well, Paladins is really only the only game that I've really enjoyed. Raiders, I liked okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm hopeful. And this hits Kickstarter on March 3rd mm-hmm. and delivers in December. Mm-hmm. It'll just hit 2020 in theory.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Kickstarter, so probably not. Although I've heard they've been successful with their other Kickstarter.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible about them.
But yeah. That's Viscounts of the West Kingdom.
All right. So we're in our top five. It's the big five. I feel like I'm starting a couple of mine in my top five. I don't even know if they're going to be out in 2020. Especially my first one. So my number five here, not my first one, the one I'm going to talk about now, is Iron Forest from Brain Games, designed by Brian Gomez. I saw this game at Gen Con, a prototype of this game. And this is basically Ice Cool, but two levels up high of Ice Cool.
Yeah.
And it's got these flippers that you press to make your character go from the bottom level to the top level. It was so much fun just playing with those. And it's built like the box in the box, so you have all the boxes are going to be in each other, like Ice Cool, and then the flipper things will be in each other in the boxes, so it condenses space like that, which is really neat. I seem to recall is their page has a description, which is good, but their page is very quiet. There's nothing on the boards about it. I seem to recall at Gen Con, they were saying January it was going to hit Kickstarter, and obviously I haven't heard anything. My guess is for this game would be a fortune to Kickstarter, because those things are probably heavy. They're probably hard to make. The flipper things, the tubes to make it go up. So I don't know when this game is coming out, if it's coming out. BGG saying 2020. Fingers crossed, though, because I think this will be a super fun experience.
Sounds neat.
It is very neat.
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 Cool. Well, my number five, there's absolutely no information about, and it's Strifen Manager, and this is by Stefan Feld.
Oh, yes, so I saw that.
Two designs coming out in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And this one sounds heavier simply because of the name and my assumptions around that. Strifen Manager. That sounds
Strifen Manager,
right?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just optimistic.
Have you looked out what that means?
No.
Strife. I'm going to do while you're...
That's a good idea. That's it. There's nothing about it. There's not a picture. There's nothing.
No, I can't find anything.
Which is kind of silly. That's my number five. But as you know, I love Feld.
Yeah.
I really do. I'm in the middle of Felduary. I'll talk about it later at our next episode. But again, every year when I play all his games, it just renews my love for this man. He's just so good. So if this had more information, it would probably be my number one. But right now, there's just a title. What does it mean?
I can't find. I'm probably not spelling it right. Google's given me nothing.
I'll
you can do it while I'm talking about my next game, which I'm sure you're super interested in. And that is Ankh, Gods of Egypt from CMON Limited, designed by Eric M. Lang, and the art by Adrian Smith. So this is the third in the, I guess it's the spiritual successor to Blood Rage and Rising Sun. This one, though, is Egyptian stuff. I don't know when this is coming out on Kickstarter. I should probably click a link here to see. Let's see. It is. I don't know when. I feel like coronavirus is making lots of stuff.
It is.
Stuff is happening, which is fair. It's probably a few months away till it hits Kickstarter. I don't know if this will be out in 2020. My guess is probably not. But BGG says it's a 2020 game. I'm going to guess it's very similar to Blood Rage and Rising Sun. I'm going to guess there's an area control component along with something that makes things a little bit different, which is, you know, Rising Sun, you have the financial aspect, the money aspect, Blood Rage, you have the card play. I know there's going to be something different to this as well. So I'm super looking forward to it. It looks gorgeous. The minis look gorgeous. Of course, not as good as they could because I don't paint, but they look great. And I do like, of the three themes, the Norse Viking stuff, the ancient Far East theme, and the Egyptian theme. This would be my favorite theme, so this will be something I definitely go all in on regardless, which is unfortunate, and I should start saving my pennies.
Said every board gamer It never happened.
Yeah, look, the first post on BGG is Ankh versus the coronavirus.
Oh, jeez. Maybe the Egyptian theme is overdone in board games. I don't know, but I think it might be my favorite theme, and I don't feel like there are a lot of midweight to heavy Euros that use this theme, mm-hmm. and I get excited every time I see a upcoming release with this theme, and then I just get disappointed because there's always minis and fighting.
Yeah, which is, this one will have that, but you know, it'll be
maybe
good.
Maybe Strife and Manager means Egyptian pyramid.
Maybe it's the Steffenfeld mini game he's working on. Who knows?
Actually, Strifen is a strip of paper or fabric.
Oh my gosh! Is it about paper making?
I don't know. Cut the paper into small strips is the example they use.
Maybe it's like what was that game from Renegade? Just had like a cut and roll or something.
Yeah.
No, a cut and whatever. Strips. It'd be hilarious if that's what Steffenfeld's next game is.
There's no way. Actually, I shouldn't say that. You never know. But I'm gonna guess it's like moving strips of actions or something, and as the game progresses,
that'd be pretty cool.
Things get shifted or something. We shall see. Or it will just not be themed at anything. It'll be about, like, fashion strips of cloth, and they won't matter.
Or it'll
that
just
won't
be,
have anything to do with mechanisms. It'll just be a pasted-on theme.
Or it'll be a strip club that you're managing. Boom!
Well, that's what I originally thought. Yeah. And then I was like, that can't be right. So then I looked into it, and it was a strip of fabric. Because the first thing I saw was a strip manager. I was like, what is that? All right. My number four, I'm really excited about. Really excited. And this is Artificial Intelligence. Designed by Nuno Bizarro Centenario and Paolo Soledad, don't know. Published by What's Your Game, which is quickly becoming one of my favorite publishers. So these guys did Madeira, Panamax, Nippon.
That's right. That railroad
I love
game.
The theme.
That railroad game, I can't Railroad Revolution, right? Did they do that too?
Yeah. I don't know if that's in there. I know What's Your Game did, but I don't know if... Mm.
Oh, yeah. What's Your Game? Sorry, that's what I was talking about. Yep.
Yeah. So this one's about artificial intelligence, so really cool theme. There's not a lot of art, but the few images they have out look fantastic. It kind of reminds me, actually, of Black Angel, like dark black within like a really vibrant purples and pinks and reds. It says it's 1 to 2 hours, plays 2 to 4. The mechanisms they have listed are hand management, stock holding, and variable phase order. And they say it's an action selection game in which players play the role of an investor pulling the strings from corporations in order to make money and increase the power of both investor and corp, which to me doesn't really fit into the theme all that much, but we'll see. I guess it's like, yeah, the corporate rush to control the new AI era is where they're coming from. So actually not as thematic with AI as maybe I would have hoped, but great designers, great publisher. The art looks fantastic. So yeah, I'm really pumped about this one. Artificial Intelligence.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. We're into the metal positions. That's what we like to talk about.
That's right.
Yeah, this is so my number three. So this was the game I mentioned. I tried to not do games that I kickstarted, but this snuck in there. I have kickstarted this game. Has been in Kickstarter HELL for quite some time, I think, right now. Hopefully it's coming soonish. Hopefully it makes it out this year, and that's Tidal Blades Heroes of the Reef. from Druid City Games, designed by Tim and Ben Eisner, with art. The art is what sold me on this game. Art from Lena Cosette and David Forrest. Yeah, I was enamored with this game from the first time I saw it. It is a drafting, dice rolling game, hand management with gorgeous, with I think it even has like some worker placement stuff in it too. Really, just everything about this game is gorgeous. My God, I was all in on the Kickstarter with everything.
Ooh.
But it has been a long time, man. I don't even remember when the Kickstarter was, and it's just been delay after delay. I think there was an update recently saying that mostly everything is done and they're ready to go, but they can't because of coronavirus at the moment, or they can't begin producing, or I don't know. So I'm hoping it will be out this year. But yeah, so that's Tidal Blades, Heroes of the Reef from Druid City Games. It's I played a couple rounds of it. It's been fun. I played it a couple times now. I can't wait to play it. It's absolutely gorgeous and a stunning production. But we'll see when it gets here.
Yeah, this was one I really debated backing because the Kickstarter was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I couldn't tell if the game would be any good, but I am excited to try it. I hope it's good.
It's got like that Seasons vibe a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think you would probably enjoy it from that perspective.
And it's got nice dice.
Everything about it is absolutely top notch, and I'm guessing, it's Druid City, so they tend to go top notch, like, components, right? So I'm guessing mm-hmm. that's what's been the problem with everything. I haven't kept totally up to date with all the Kickstarter updates, but you know, when you go for fancy schmancy on Kickstarter, you're probably gonna have issues. So
yeah, that's true. Cool. Yeah, I'm excited for this one too. My bronze medal goes to Alma Mater, which is it looks like Coimbra.
Bra.
It's designed by Flaminia Bersini, Virginio Gigli, Stefano Luperto, and Antonio Tinto, which are the designers of some of my favorite games, Grand Austria Hotel, Lorenzo Il Magnifico. Both of those games I absolutely adore. Coimbra, I enjoyed as well. The art is still Chris Quilliams, who did Coimbra as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's got this really pretty colorful vibe to it, which is refreshing for a Euro.
It really does.
Yeah. It really looks very, very similar. Mm-hmm. Like even the characters on the cards
mm-hmm.
look like they're the same game. So the only thing we really know about this is you're a headmaster of an independent university in the 15th century. You're seeking to strengthen your school's reputation and standing. In order to do that, you recruit staff and students, exchange knowledge, and become experts in the school's four disciplines, which I'm guessing are four tracks. I'm just going to guess.
You might be right.
Yeah. The mechanisms, we've got some drafting, end game bonuses, hand management, tile placement, worker placement. There's book bits, which I really like. The player bits are books. I have a feeling this is probably going to be like a four. Medium weight Euro scratches, or ticks the boxes for what I really like. But I'm hoping it'll have the spark like Lorenzo and Grand Austria, which is my number one. So, yeah. Really looking forward to this one.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, and it's debuting at Gen Con, hitting retail soon after, so I don't even have to wait till SN.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, you ready for my number two?
I am.
I'll give you a hint, Michelle. Okay. It's a game you've already talked about.
Is it now? I've been deleting all my stuff.
I know, I'm doing that too. I have so many tabs open, it's stressing me out.
Okay, hold up. Let me, undo. Okay, let's see. I'm going to guess... you sounded surprised by Dice Realms. Viscounts of the West Kingdom.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Good call.
Thanks.
Yeah, so I'm kind of a little bit the flip of you in that I love Architects of the West Kingdom. It is, one of my top 10 games probably right now. I adore it, even though it is mean, but it's mean but a quick experience, which makes things better. I do enjoy Paladins, not not as much as Architects. Yeah, I can't wait for this. I just like looking at, I was looking at the things, the pictures before. The rondel looks great. The board looks great. I love the little minis with the flags look great. So I'm super, super excited for this. It looks like it stands out nicely from the others. So, yeah.
Yep. There you go.
That's my
silver.
My silver.
Is pretty, like, of course, it's my silver. And that's Takenhu. I don't know how to say that correctly. And I Googled it and I couldn't find it. Obelisk of the Sun.
Okay.
This plays 1 to 4 in 1 to 2 hours. And the designer is Danielle Tassini and David Turksky, published by Board and Dice. These guys are responsible for Zulkin, Voyages of Marco Polo, Teotihuacan, Trismegistus. So, yeah, those are gooders.
That's
fair. So, I'm excited anytime they put anything out. Plus, the theme is pretty great. This is another rondel game, or so it appears. So, it looks like there's a rondel with, I think it's like 6 spaces. And kind of similar to Teotihuacan, you place dice, and then depending on the value and the color, you take an action and it might be more or less powerful. But the other factor that impacts these spaces is this obelisk. And right now all they have on the on BGG is like paper prototypes. So I'm not sure how they're going to pull this off. But the the middle is supposed to be an obelisk. And it turns, I believe, and then it has like partial shadow, full shadow, and then no shadow. And then that also impacts the spaces. So I think it might like, I think full shadow, you might not be able to use the space, and then other like semi shadows impact it. There's actually quite a lot of information on BGG on how it works. This is like one of the few descriptions that it's almost like a rule book. Well, not really, but, yeah, so that sounds pretty cool. I really like their games. This looks like it'll be pretty much like the other ones in terms of complexity, and you're kind of your typical Euro in a way. So, yeah.
Cool.
I think I'll like this one. I just want to see. There's like, oh, there's another prototype where they actually have a 3D obelisk in the middle, and it looks like they're using it as a dice tower, so that could be fun. Yeah. But yeah, looks good. I'm sure it's going to be good. That's Takenhu, Obelisk of the Sun. And you know, this is so typical. I just finished saying there aren't enough Euros with an Egypt theme. My number 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, you ready for the gold medal?
You know I am.
The gold medal? All right. Let me see. I'm not going to make you try and guess this, because I feel like you're probably not going to be able to guess it. Because, fun fact, this was not on the top 4 pages of BGG.
I'm impressed with your list, considering you only looked at 4 pages.
Yeah, and I knew this would be my number 1. So I will preface this by saying I'm slightly cheating because I've probably played this game 30, 40, 50 times over the last few years. I have played it a lot.
What?
I have played it a lot. It's a game by a local designer called The Deadlies, from Smirk and Dagger Games, designed by Paul Saxberg and art by Leah Furman. I mentioned before how, you know, I would use Time's Up as a game to, you know, show my game style. This would probably be a very close second. In fact, this is probably the game that I've had the most laughs and actual sheer enjoyment, and that's just playing Paul's various prototypes over the years for, and I was screamed for joy when I found out he got it published. Because this is such a fun game. You're basically, what you are doing is you are playing your it is a very much, I would say, a take that game, but there's Yeah, it's a take that game. You are playing your cards, which are based on the seven deadly sins, and they're going to do things that basically will screw over your opponent over and over, and you're trying to get rid of all the cards in your hand. Ultimately, that is your ultimate goal, to get rid of your hand. I think it's now it's three times. So you want to empty your hand three times to win and become, as BGG says, become the envy of all your friends. And you're doing this by playing, you're going to be playing cards that are the same suit, number value, so they're numbered, I believe, 1 to 7, I want to say, or straights of any length, and you're playing them as much as you can, and each card you play is going to do something different for the most part that's either going to hurt your opponent, likely, or potentially help you by helping you get rid of more cards. Like I said, in terms of humor and how much I've laughed, I don't know that I've played another game that has made me laugh this much throughout the years of this game. So I am super excited to get this game. I believe it comes out in the next month, I think beginning of March. I think Paul said like March 4th it comes out. So it will be hitting the stores very soon. And I encourage everyone to look it up. I know I will be getting it right away as well.
Yeah, I've played this a few times as well, and I will say I enjoy it, you know, for what it is. Mm-hmm. Certainly on the higher spectrum of enjoyment for that type of game, and I know other people have said the same thing, like who aren't necessarily into party games. Yeah. It's like, this is actually a game I can handle. Yeah, it's neat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun one. It's cool to see the art too, like mm-hmm. to see how it's evolved.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and the art looks cool. really nice. Really fun. So
good pick.
Mm-hmm.
So all right, what can you guess what my number one is?
Does it,
you should know.
Does it have anything to do with wine and cheese and
yes.
under the sun in a place called Tuscany?
Yes.
And castles.
Yes.
So tell me about this game, Michelle.
Well, The Castles of Tuscany is a standalone game that might resemble The Castles of Burgundy in some way. It's the family is Edmund, better description needed. And the category is NA. So there you go. What more could you ask for? Yeah, I mean, I love Castles of Burgundy. It's such a beautiful, elegant game. And I think I have no idea what to expect. I don't know if this will be like very close to it or what, but yeah, I'm excited. It looks, someone actually mentioned when I heard about this for the first time, it kind of looks like there might be a rondelle, because if you look at the cover is like one of those door knockers, the lion with the ring in his mouth, mm-hmm. and around it is a circle with what looks like action spots, so maybe it'll be a rondelle too, which mm-hmm. would be like mind-blowing for me.
Fancy.
I love my rondelles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know when this is supposed to come out. Have you heard?
I'm going to guess Essen, but I don't know.
Yeah, I would guess that too.
Because he usually has
sooner.
He usually has one big and one small game, right? Is that like how he does mm-hmm. things? And I think the big one is usually an Essen? But yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Hopefully we don't have to wait that long. But yeah, I'm pumped. I love Feld. He's the best.
I do enjoy Castles of Burgundy, so I would.
It's a good one.
Yeah, so yeah. I would be curious whether, I mean, a reskin of Castles of Burgundy wouldn't be the worst idea.
Although, well, they just came out with
I know, and they failed miserably on making it look better.
It could be better. Like, I kind of wish they could have done much more with it, but it still looks better. And it's nice to have all the content together in one package with one rule book and all that stuff, too.
Cool.
You feeling me?
I'm feeling you, bruh. I'm feeling you.
Well, there you go. There's our bits we can't wait to fondle in 2020. If you know our tastes or you don't care, message us on social media. Yeah. Tell us what we missed or what you're looking forward to. Maybe we should take a peek at.
Yeah, like there might be something on page 17 of the BGG list.
Yes.
Like, let us know.
Very likely.
Yeah.
Very likely. Yeah. All right. Well, before we close out the show, we just want to say thanks again to our amazing listeners and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. The next time you're playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.